right now. So welcome to the February 12th Use Case Realization Call. Today, Ted Johnson is going to be talking about some moment-driven Ning work. So I'm going to stop sharing here. Go ahead, Ted, take it away.
Shankar, do you want to present?
Yeah, let me do that. Where's my... So you're recording, Ben?
Or... Yeah, the recording is underway.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. So thanks, everyone. My name is N.K. Shankar, and we have, many of you know, we have a project called ONAP-based SON for 5G. And so in some sense that this use case is sort of at the leading edge of some of the issues that Ted Johnson is going to talk about. And so in this use case, it's a SON use case for the mobility network. And the way we do this in this use case is, as you see on the right, there is a simulated radio access network, a simulated RAN, and which has a Yang model for the network. And shown here, and the elements involved are DCIe, OF, DCIe as microservices, there's policy, there's an SDNR controller. In some sense, all the details are not that important. I actually created another slide. Whoops, where did that go? Just focusing, I just took the parts of it which are interacting with the network. So here you have a network with a Yang model, okay? And this network is being controlled by the controller in the middle, which is SDNR. And this control goes out in step 11. And if you see the blue box, there's a netconf configuration. And this same network, when there's a configuration change, the configuration notification, config management, CM notification comes in the bottom in this step 3A as a config notification, that is CM notification. It comes into a VES collector, which publishes on DMAP. And in this use case, that message is actually processed by the controller, because the controller owns at least those elements which are being controlled. And this SDNR controller updates a database, and this database is the runtime config DB RCDB. So this is a loop. You control the network, you get notifications, and you maintain a database, which is useful. Everybody needs it. There are other modules that might read this database. So I want to highlight all these stars here that you see. Is on the right, I put all these red stars where you have a netconf, you have a network, which is, and all the elements, and you have a Yang model for this network. And what we demonstrated in ONAP Dublin is you can send netconf configuration messages to configure a network which is aligned with the Yang model. Now, at that time, we have to keep a database of all the configuration state, and that database is in, we called it ConfigDB. And in Dublin, and I've highlighted these stars in green. So what we did in Dublin is there is a model of the network and a database that ONAP knows about, and that is all green stars. And that is red stars is the model of the network in Yang based on NetConf Yang. And we didn't fully align those two because at that time we were just getting started. And to make it a little bit more precise, we configured something called a physical cell ID, PCI. So on the right here, if I have this PCI value in our ONAP Dublin model, you know, there's a configuration group, LTE RAN RFG, it has a leaf called PHY cell ID, that's what we used. Going forward, 3GPP is standardizing all this, and ORAN is standardizing it. The PCI will be, for 5G will be NR PCI. It'll be inside an in-class object called NR cell DU. And so the context for what you're going to hear now is, why should this green stars and the red stars be different? Why not make everything aligned to the Yang model of the network? So that means you have a Yang model, notifications are aligned with the Yang model, network updates, whatever controller is parsing is aligned with the Yang model. So you send out netconf Yang messages to control the network. You update a database where the schema and the APIs are all as aligned as possible to the Yang model. And that's what this talk is about. Ted Johnson is going to show you how you can automate this and all these questions about, you know, you have different Yang models, different files, different versions. How do we deal with all that? It's a complex problem. But if you do it this way, then we don't have to keep making changes every time the Young model changes. Yeah.
Shankar, I have a question. What is this database?
This database, there is an entire new project called Runtime Config Database, and Ben is the leading that with Joanne, and they have calls on Friday, but it's a database which keeps the state of the network and especially the configuration state. And it's going to be a full project in the next release. And some preliminary work was already done. It's called ConfigDB, and there's a MariaDB-based database. And so Ted will talk about how he used the MariaDB instance for his work. Does that answer your question?
I've put the project page in the chat, so you can visit the page while people are talking.
Okay, should I share my screen? Yeah. There we go. So if everybody can see my slides?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Shankar gave a good introduction here. If I can get my slide deck to advance. Yeah, so the goals of this project are to generate a database from a Yang model, and there's two advantages there. One is that it reduces the effort that's required to build your database, and also you want to ensure consistency with the model. So if you're generating it from the model, you're going to be consistent. We're going to target a relational DBMS. ConfigDB was using MariaDB, so I'm in the things I've written, I'm targeting that. There's some advantages. Relational database is a mature, well-known technology. It's easy to get people to help run it for you. And from my point of view, I'm actually a data management person. It's important because it enables ad hoc queries. I spend a lot of time doing data quality audits. It also ended up being the case that Yang model subsetting became important. We only needed the relevant portion of a very large model in the applications that Shankar was looking at. And when we actually get to the model, you'll be very glad that I'm only dealing with a small subset of it. And so it's one thing to have a database. It's one thing to generate a bunch of table definitions, but you also need an API. So I can also generate a CRUD API on this database. So CRUD is such a wonderful name, just create, retrieve, update, delete. It's just just the most basic API that you can have. And again, if you generate this, then you know you're going to be consistent with the model. So the approach I'm going to take is I'm going to pre-process the Yang model. Yang is complicated. I need something a little bit simpler. Then I'm going to create a mapping from structured data to a flat relational model. I'm going to use an approach called flattening. There's many approaches. I'll talk about this more later. Then after I have that mapping, I can create SQL create table statements. I can also generate a table which records this mapping, and I'm going to drive the CRUD APIs from this mapping table. And you know, this is all very abstract. I'll go through some examples and I'll make it very clear. So in terms of pre-processing the Yang model, you know, Yang is complicated, has a lot of non-data descriptions in it. So I want to get rid of all the stuff I don't need. I want to get to clean up things like, you know, including external files, handling grouping and uses and things like that. And another thing that I wanted to do is I wanted to standardize it so that the subsequent tool chain, which actually generates the database, can be applied to other models also, like a Tosca model, a JSON schema model, and so forth. The thing that I developed uses a standardized representation that I developed for a previous product. For a previous project, and this by doing this, I was able to get this thing up and running very, very quickly. And for me, it works well, but I'm open to other alternatives. It's just what worked for me right then. So let me talk about how one maps structured data to flat relational tables. And if this seems very abstract, I'll show some specific examples very soon. And one thing to remember is that there's many, many options for performing this mapping. I'm going to choose one. The thing that I'm choosing is a technique I think colloquially called flattening. And, you know, in the standards documents, they have very, very deep nested structures, which generally reflect some sort of logical category. You know, there's a section for CDMA 2000, a section for LTE, and so on and so forth. And there's just a lot of, you know, scalar values like strings or integers or things like that embedded very deeply. And we're just going to bring them up to the nearest, to the highest point where we can. Now, sometimes you do have to create another subtable, and this is where you encounter a list node in the Yang model. And they usually have key declarations that pretty much define the table. And then you keep track of the parent table relationships. And then, you know, I've done this mapping, and so I just need to create a table which keeps track of all the bookkeeping that happened. And, you know, again, if this is abstract, I'll show specific examples in just a minute.
Hey, can I make a quick point, Ted? I just wanted to let people know that Ted's work is generic. It applies to any model, but one of the models he worked with is what we had. So it's not 5G. That's why you saw CDMA and LTE and GSM and things like that. Yeah. Thanks, Ted.
Yeah, those things are going to show up a little bit later. Sorry. So I think because these standards documents are very large, you know, they try to cover every application. If you try to generate a database from them, they can be large enough to be unwieldy. So you might be generating, you know, dozens and dozens of tables, whereas only a small part of it is relevant. So if you can subset the model in some sort of a principled way, you can extract the relevant portions. And it, you know, things are simpler, a lot easier to manage. That's just what it's about. There's many ways to do subsetting. I'll show some examples. I specify the subtrees that I need to pull out of the model, and I take the entire subtree. I pull out some extra stuff, so perhaps it's not the best approach, but it was simple and it worked. Let me talk about the running example. This is from what Shankar used. My understanding is that this model is being obsoleted, but I'm very familiar with it. It compiles pretty well in Pyang without a lot of complaints, so I'm just gonna use it. This is the BBF TR-196 2.0.3 full model. This describes femtocell access points. It's 17,000 lines of Yang, so it's a pretty big model. This is the basis for this physical cell ID optimization project that Shankar was working on, and that's what he got me involved with. And there's another advantage here because someone named Sandeep Shah at IBM actually built a database, did the subsetting, and constructed a set of APIs for it. And so this gave me an example that I could target myself towards. So, and that's another good reason for me to to work in this. So let me show you the model. This is a visualization of the full model, and it is so big that if I'm to display it, it just looks like a blur. So let's go to just the subsetted model. This is using a incremental graph visualization tool written by one of my colleagues. And the red dots show the pieces that we need. So we don't need the entire model, just some little pieces from it here. There is various pieces of kinds of information that we need. So from this node, we need, I think, the PNF name, and we need some other stuff from some other nodes, and then we need the, this is all about managing cell IDs of your neighbor lists. So we need this neighbor list table. Now we need some field from here, at least I think we need some field from here. So that means that we wind up in the things I'm actually doing, we're grabbing these three other tables also. So these things which look like houses, these are tables. So it's a map. You have a key and a value. But let me show it to you a little bit more live. So you know, this is the femtocell access point model, and it maps a key, the alias, and this is the name of the cell site, to a set of values. And you can see there's this deeply nested thing. You can get a device type and then a lot of other stuff. So we're going to go over here and we need to grab the PNF name. And in the output, I'm going to associate the PNF name just with this table up here. So I'm going to pull it up into the value section. And we need some stuff down here from LTE Common. I'm going to take cell identity and again pull it up into the main table, and so on and so forth. And that's basically what flattening means. I'm going to take all these fields here, the old bandwidth, and so on and so forth. I'm just going to pull them upwards and store them all in this one table. I'd have to store this table anyway because I'm mapping a key to a value. And I'm going to do something. When I come down here, I can't pull this up because this is a different table. And something to remember is that it's a subtable of the main table. If you're familiar with structured data, you have a JSON or an XML description of your FAP service, and you come down this branch with the tree, and then you have a whole new list here, and this is a whole new subtable embedded in the structured document. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to flatten this. I'm just going to pull out the tables that I need. I'm going to try to create the absolute minimal number of tables that I need. And so in this case, the set of tables I have is the parent table, FAP service, the subtable that is really relevant, LTE RAN, neighbor list, and use LTE cell, and some other things which came along because of the way I'm doing subsetting. And you can see here is the FAP service table. Here is the one we're really, really interested in, LTE RAN, neighbor list, in use LTE cell, and the other stuff that came along. So it really just flattens these things down. This is the minimal number of tables that we can get away with without playing weird tricks. So there's some bookkeeping that we have to do. And this is a kind of a review document that I generate, which describes all the bookkeeping. So the subtable LTE RAN neighbor list inter rat cell CDMA 2000 lives at a certain path, this path right here, in the actual structured document. And you can see that's this path coming down here, or here. And it has a set of fields, and we're just going to plot these fields. So the flattening is not really taking place there, but if we look at the parent table, it has a key alias, and that's in the primary table. But then we're pulling out all these other fields from other components of that structured data document. So from if we navigate to cell config, LTE, LTE RAN, LTE RAN common, we can find cell identity, and we're going to store that in this main table called FAP service. But this is okay because we know how to, if we're given a structured data document, we know how to populate the cell identity field in the relational table. And if we pull out the cell identity from the relational table, we know how to put it back into the structured data document. So it's really all about this bookkeeping. So this is an example of the an SQL create table statement. This is for LTE RAN, the one we're really interested in. So this is just, most of this is just, these are all the fields that are coming around. I'm going to give every record a unique ID, and there's many ways of doing that. Now, because I need to maintain parent-child relationships, I also want to keep track of the parent ID. And so that's this thing over here. Now, there's a couple of other things that I need to stitch everything together. I want to say that the LTE RAN neighbor list in use LTE cell is a child table of FAP service, and we just do this with a foreign key constraint, which is this thing over here. And then we also have to define the primary key of this table. Now, in the Yang document, this is a list with key PLMN ID and CID. But you have to remember, again, this is a relative key. It's a key for this list at that point in the document. There might be many of these, so we also have to throw in the parent ID. So we have to keep track of its position in the structured data document. So I've generated the create table statements. I also need this structured data to relational data map. And it's just a lot of bookkeeping. For the table section, there's a table section, a skeleton section, which I guess could be combined, but they say different things. In the table section, I just talk about the table itself, what the keys of the table are, and what all the fields are, which is, you know, basically name, data type, and the path. The skeleton section talks about the relationships between the relational tables. And then there is something which kind of helps with some of the APIs. If you give me a node in the graph and a field, I need to be able to map it to somewhere over here. And this is just a little helper. And so we can take a look at this, just this JSON document over here. There we go. So for the FAP service, it has the keys alias, has a bunch of fields, the type, the path, and some other stuff, which is, you know, basically more bookkeeping. So I can also, I also created a set of APIs. This was all done on a, try to do it as quickly as possible as opposed to the best way possible. So I created just a collection of Python programs which interpret this table map. So for the parameters, you pass in the this table map and also a payload in JSON. Sandeep's implementation communicated with JSON, so I figured that'd be okay to do. And the different kinds of APIs I have are insert, and that's the create part, a couple of different extraction or retrieve functions, one which extracts a subtree from a specified position, and one which extracts a field from all the subtrees, which are, you can get a list of field values back. So this is, extract field is kind of a point query, and this is a tree query. There's patch, this is the update. You can set the value of a specific field in a specific node, and then you can delete a subtree. So with this, we have the, we have all the functions of the CRUD API. So the thing to do next is to go on to the demonstrations. So let me pull this thing up. I hope this is visible. The text is a little bit small. So this is just all the different tables. We're mostly interested in this one and this one. So these are all the fields in the parent table. And we can take a look at its contents. I emptied it out so I can repopulate it. And it's in fact empty.
So Ted, you're going to go through a process of inserting a subtree?
Yeah. I'm gonna populate this. So. These are all basically the queries I have sitting over here. And again, I put them in JSON. This makes life easier for me to get this thing up and running rapidly. And so this is a structured data document. Okay. So this is a structured data document. This is one particular, I'm saying that I want to insert something into the FAP service table. I need to give it the key, the place I'm going to be inserting it. I'm skimming the entire, this is the root level table, so I don't need a key. And this is the payload. This is the structured data document. And this I'm taking this from some of the examples that I saw from the PCIe optimization project. And so I have a collection of these. I'll insert four things over here. So I'm passing in the payload down at the bottom here, and I also have to tell the program how to interpret the tables and how to interpret structured data document, and that's with this this map that's set aside. So I've inserted one. Let's see if it managed to get in. And sure enough, it's in it now. So let me put in some more things.
So this is inserting tables in MySQL.
Yes.
In the MariaDB database. Okay.
It's inserting records into MariaDB. You can see them over here.
Mm-hmm.
There's also records in this table. So this is where everything is now stored. So let's try a query which extracts, which tells me all the keys of all the tables, and that's this one over here. This is the payload for it, at least. And this just says get all the values of the alias. The alias field is only one alias field, so I don't really have to specify the node. And I'm not going to specify any keys which define a path for getting it, so it's going to get me all the keys. So from there, we can these are all the things I inserted, all the distinct alias values. Then let's extract the subtree associated with this one. So this is just this is saying I want something from the tape from this node, this table, and this is the key to use. And you have to navigate exactly to this table. So this shows that I can go from the this flat relational representation and reconstruct the structured data document. I can also insert this thing. And so I'm going to add another neighbor cell to this particular cell site. And there it is. Here it is. So I've gone over that, So let's try doing an update. So this is going to change I believe RAN 1 CHN 00. So it's going to change this physical cell ID to 55. And sure enough, that's what happened. I can also add another field, which didn't exist yet. And I added the value of, I added this thing over here. So I can, so I've demonstrated the create, the update, the retrieve. So I just need the delete. And this will delete one of the neighbor cells from this table. And sure enough, now we're back down to two. So this is a run through of this is a demonstration that I could take the technology to take a Yang document, which view it as describing structured data, build the relational tables which can represent that structured data with all the bookkeeping from the mappings. And then from this, from a bookkeeping table, which is that tables.json thing that I keep using that I showed briefly, I'm using this to actually drive these APIs. And all they're doing is they're going through the bookkeeping, storing things, reconstructing things, navigating documents, and so on and so forth. What did I do here? I developed an initial POC. I developed it very rapidly. So there's many rough edges, many missing features. In terms of the APIs could be, all the rough edges here. The APIs could be more efficient. They could be better integrated into a REST service. It should generate Swagger documents and all that stuff. But I managed to demonstrate the capability to auto-generate a relational database with CRUD APIs from a Yang model. So if nothing else, it's a very good starting point. And even if you don't really like the starting point, I think I've been able to demonstrate the approach to developing this kind of a capability. You start off with a model analysis, then you make a methodical translation from the structured data model to a relational representation. You store that map, and then you drive your APIs from that map. And that's essentially what I have to talk about. Maybe I can take some questions or show some more things.
I can start with the first question. So about this structured format that you had in some examples, how does that relate to the original Yang models?
So the structure, let's take a look at one. So this is an example structure. I am not certain if I'm not, one of the rough edges is I'm not really handling required versus not required fields properly right now. But other than that, this would be a valid data record. I'm written in JSON instead of XML, but a valid data record which matches this full model. So if I expanded this entire thing and I didn't worry too much about which fields are actually required or which subtrees are actually required, this is a valid instance of a structured data document described by this Yang model.
Okay, so you could call it Yang instance data.
Yeah, I'm not really a Yang expert, so yeah. So it's a Yang instance data record.
Okay.
Todd, how question? So the given the right now for the Sun use case, you have the condition is we have to know what parameters attributes we need to extract from the Yen model, right? So mm-hmm. right now, just say you extract like say a dozen foot parameter relate to the neighbor list. Then you do the parameter, every development model work resign into the SDNR. For this release, Frankfurt release, so we will override or change the API, then to the MariaDB. In this case, MariaDB just like a database record, doesn't do anything, just like, storing the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
For current presentation.
So you're asking about what happens if the Yang model changes?
Yeah, the flow I'm talking about, like say you're doing the extracting parameters, like say the neighbor list, right? Then you put in the all the child have parents ID, you put a table, and then you put into this thing to the MariaDB. Then you also had to insert, delete, or modify the table for the API. So the question number one. Do you change the existing API from doubling release or leave the API as the way it is for Frankfurt release?
There's a lot to unpack here, these are some tricky things. What I'm doing is I am given a Yang model, and this is just a visualization that I like to use of what these things look like. Of course, there's many others, but given a Yang model, I'm developing a backend database and an API, a very basic CRUD API, which exactly matches that Yang model. So if you change the Yang model and you run this thing again, you'll get a new database. Of course, a question to address is how easy is it to upgrade from the old model to the new model? There is certainly a number of things which aren't that hard. If you're to say, you want to keep track of something else, some fields from over here, or you want to add this table, or some other subtable. If you want to expand the model, that's easy. If you want to change some names, you can actually keep the old database. I don't have this code written, but you can actually keep the old database because there's actually two names here. There's the name in the model, and then the name in the SQL table. And I'm trying to keep them reasonably similar, but they don't have to be the same. And there's various reasons for this, why there has to be a distinction between the two. So if you move from version one of the model to version two of the model, and you want to keep the same database, all your old records lying around, depending upon the nature of the change, it might be easier or harder to migrate the database. But there's certainly a lot of flexibility here in the way these mapping tables are built and in the various kinds of automated analysis that one can do to try to figure out what a reasonably simple upgrade strategy might be. Of course, you might do things so that, it just doesn't match at all. But in that case, you need a new database. I think that for most things that you want to do, you're adding some pieces to it, you're maybe renaming things a little bit. For most things like that, it can be handled fairly readily. But I've not addressed this. This is I want to make certain that people are interested in this kind of a project before really moving forward with it. And so all I have right now are these the ability to generate the database from the Yang model and to also drive CRUD APIs on that database based on that model. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, in the high level, probably I have to talk to you for that another meeting. Yeah, thank you.
There's a lot of tricky details, so yeah.
So I would say, Joanne, if we get into the issue of what happens as the model changes, it is a complex issue. But specifically for ONAP Frankfurt and ONAP QLE in the next release, the APIs that Sandeep and others developed, I think going forward, if you're changing the Yang model, you might as well change the APIs that are coming from this automated tool for the next release. We have just started, so I don't think there is a huge need to try to be backward compatible. I think it's okay. If we go down this path, I think it's okay for the config DB to say, going forward, we are making a change, and we won't go back to the Dublin data model, because it's still fairly compact. Of course, there's an impact on other modules, but it seems like a logical place to do that. But then after that, from release 7 to release 8, if we are doing this, then everything Ted said becomes very, very relevant. And it's not an easy problem keeping track of model changes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this at least gives you an automated way of doing it. So that, I think, overall, people have to decide. If you let everything be automated, then the APIs, the models and the schema and the APIs will keep changing, but then you're always aligned. But if you want to be backward compatible, I'll give you an example, which we were discussing. If suppose someone says, look, I have cell ID in 4G and 5G. And in 4G, cell ID was called LTE cell ID, and I called it cell ID. And in 5G, it's called NR and I cell ID. And I don't want to change my names because I have many databases calling it cell ID. Then you'll have to always keep track of that cell ID. And this is an easy case because you can say cell ID is always cell ID, whether it's 4G or 5G or 3G or whatever. But then you could come into other properties which will start becoming complicated if you want to use the same old one. And then you'll have to create new things because there are new things in the new technology. You have a separate CU and a DU, and so you need new objects. And so I think it'll have to be done sort of case by case. But at least if the tools are there, we have the overall people have the flexibility of figuring out how they want to keep changing. And
yeah, so I think, you know, one concern might be, is it possible to have the same database serve two different APIs at the same time, two different versions of an API at the same time? And yeah, that starts to get really, really complicated. If the changes are not too drastic, it is possible to do. And you basically keep two different versions of this mapping table lying around.
How about the other problem? Can you have a network with a mix of equipment and different software releases, and so you have two models which are very similar, but they are both valid? But disjoint. They're so one part of the network is model one, another part of the network is model two, but functionally they are very similar. Can it be the same API? Yeah.
So you're again, it's possible to do this if the models are very similar. It is possible to, after this kind of an analysis, and you know, in this analysis, you'll see I'm not doing anything magical. It's just very, very methodical. And just keeping track of the details. If two models are very similar, then one should be able to identify the points where they're the same and the points where they're different. And then you just need to address the points where they're different. It might be possible to come up with a merged combined model. And again, you would serve model one or model two based on changing this mapping table.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. So I think the right way to think about this work is it's a very powerful and flexible functionality. And how it's used in ONAP depends on how overall different groups in ONAP want to use it. Now, in this case of anything to do with the mobility network, it's a radio access network, and it's going to be an ORAN-based Yang model. And so that's how this problem started. Marco, I think you're still, if you're listening, you said you had some comments on how something similar might apply to other.
To be honest, I got some other things lately. I didn't follow this topic too much, considering that I also have conflicts at this time. So I was going through the wiki that Benjamin posted here. Just a non-technical comment is, considering that this may be applied to other things, maybe, at least based on what I read here, just make sure that you guys reach out to all the people that may be interested or impacted by this. For example, when I see the project description and all the kind of information that one could store in the DB, I also see things about policy or closed loop related thing, but just make sure that they know what the plan is, because I can tell you that the control loop team is not aware of this project right now. So just to guarantee that things are in alignment. So that was my comment. And from more technical point of view, I have a question. I'm not sure you already addressed this point, but considering that you have a model, right, and you build something out of that model, is there also a model lifecycle management, meaning that you upload a model and that is version one, then if you make a change, you have version two, and in some way your system keeps track of it, pretty much the same way SDC today keeps track of different VNF or service models?
Yeah, you're way ahead of anything that that I've done. So it's a very good question. It's the right thing to look to ask if you're being forward looking. But what I've done right now is I've just demonstrated this technology. I kind of need a certain amount of acceptance to really start to address those issues. But yes, generally speaking, you would. Well, it's probably a good idea to try to keep around older versions of models, just to understand them. And this is what sort of like what Joanne was asking about. Would I be keeping around all the old model descriptions? And I suppose one thing that I was trying to say is, if you want to keep, first of all, yes, that's a good idea, but that's further down the line than I've been able to get here. But also, if you want to be able to serve the same database in multiple versions, usually old versus new, because software might get rolled out, there might be some delays in rolling it out. You definitely need to keep some kinds of mappings. You need to keep the old model, the old mapping around, the new mapping around, and how you convert between them. So basically, this is way beyond anything that I'm doing right now. But yes, that'd be a very good idea.
Any other questions for Ted? So this is kind of a standalone thing right now. Maybe we want to eventually incorporate this into one of the sort of more platform level GUIs in ONAP, like the Design Center or something. Is it?
I think my interpretation of Ted's answer is this capability is available and you're happy to contribute it. we'll have to still go through some internal approvals in AT&T. But he also said another thing that's important, which is if this needs to move forward, there's more work to be done. And he personally would have the motivation and incentive to do it if it was actually accepted in ONAP, that actually if it becomes very clear which use case is using it, are there more than one use case using it? So in some sense, it's a very useful solution, which I think is already relevant, but we need to identify how relevant and how many, where does it fit in ONAP and who's going to use it in what way. That is the part it's kind of still needs a little bit more as it gets more socialized, and
yeah.
Good, we are recording this. That's the part kind of sort of missing. Yeah.
Sure, and I think
so. Then Shankar, just want to confirm at least in Frankfurt release, in the Sun use case, we'll leverage this automation tool already, right? Just
no,
in the base
no.
in the Sun.
Actually, no, Joanne, no. That was the intent. We thought we would do that, but we ran into a timing issue, and we ran into another issue that it still needs work to use this automation in Frankfurt. And that work, in some sense, all that extra work will sort of go a little waste when the model changes, when the next release. So that is why we actually decided not to. Because there is an impact on Ted, there's an impact on Sandeep, there's an in-depth impact on the ransom, and then there's an impact on the microservice and OF because they're reading from the API. So there's an impact of everybody. And so that's why we said it's good that the automation exists, and I think it will be useful, it won't go waste. But I didn't want to ask that to put in more effort to make it fit into Frankfurt if it was not going to be used by other people in Frankfurt. And if he uses automation, I don't see an easy way to use this automation and use the API Sandeep already has. And so Sandeep knows about this. He's on the call also. So we discussed this back and forth. And so Sandeep, I don't know if you have any comment on
how this... Yeah, Ted and Shankar, I think is here basically Yang model kind of getting translated to some JSON payload. And as you know, our ConfigDB at this time is a MariaDB or MySQL based, like some more relational tables. So the backend database we use is MariaDB. When we are going to store these JSON payloads or JSON documents, we do need to think about or considering different backend databases. And I think we also talked about that before.
Actually, Sandeep, I think Ted can correct me, but I think Ted went one more step further and he showed all this, the database actually being on MariaDB with SQL tables.
Yeah, it's in MariaDB.
Oh, sorry, I missed that. I do need to look into it more. Thank you.
I don't think it was a database, but it's the impact on changing the APIs and then telling everyone else to use different APIs. So Sandeep, I suggest please take a look. There is a part of this I think you may not have been aware of, because Ted basically said, I'm going to just do a MariaDB here. And he took examples of all the stuff that we had done, and he tried to replicate, see, this is how it would happen. The part that is missing is the APIs. If it is, let's put it this way, if we can use the same APIs that we have now, because it's in the Swagger and that's what everybody else is, and the microservice and OF are using, and we can still somehow leverage this, then we can do it in Frankfurt as a part of POC, because it's fully compatible with everything else. And the one thing that might change is the database tables in some sense, because if you're really using this, then you'll have a table with let's say five properties, or 10 properties based on the Yang model. And the table that you have now might not have 10 properties. It might have 3 properties or something. So the actual database might change a little bit, but then in some sense, it has already implemented it, what it will look like in MariaDB. So the part that is missing to answer Joanne's question is without changing the APIs, can we use these new tables? The answer to Joanne's question would be yes, there is a way to use it. But Sandeep, I need you to look at that because it really depends on, it's not the issue of spinning up a MariaDB instance or modifying it. That'll happen in half a day, but it's just making sure that the current APIs, the way they are, can still point to a different database and still have the same function. Then we would have achieved something. And I think there might be a way. I'd actually not appreciated that. Ted, can you show? Ted at one point said, even the table that is generated automatically, the name of the table doesn't have to be the same as what's in the Yang model. If there is a reason, so you have a somewhere you had the name and the SQL name, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's this bit over here.
Yeah. So for example, under this, in the middle of this screen where it says fill cell ID, the field name is phi cell ID because that's the way STNR needs it for the netconf. But the SQL name, if we called it PCI value, we can change it to PCI value. And that's what it will be in the MariaDB. So there might still be a way. So Joanne, to answer your question, we did not make it formal because we didn't know if they could commit to it. But there might still be a way to do that.
Okay.
Sandeep, does that make sense? Do you understand the point I'm making? If I say it a different way, I think there is a way to take this SQL table that Ted has generated and modify it slightly so that it looks exactly like the table that you have.
I mean, that was, and, in fact, yeah, my question to Ted. After you went through the exercise, the MySQL table that came out, were they very similar to what we had used?
I think the Ted already extracted certain parameter. The one you have a doubling release, right? Chunk, just make sure I understand, like, right? You manually fitting, but you already had the existing parameter in there. But type just enhances the automation process. If we add this, we can get.
No, I agree. There is a little detail involved in making sure that these tables are fully aligned with the API as published in the Swagger. It really boils down to that. So there is a current Swagger API. So let me make it even more state it even more simple. There is code already in ONAP Dublin, and it's some of it is modified for ONAP Frankfurt. But when the microservice and OOF, they will use a particular API to read config.db, and they cannot change their code because we are beyond that point. Now, if config.db can say, oh yeah, you still use the same API, you will still get the same data. You don't care what the table actually is inside. And so we are free to change the config.db implementation as long as it's consistent with the API. And it might not be any big amount of work, Sandeep, but it just requires a little bit of thinking to see how will that API exactly fit? I think what my interpretation is, Ted has already demonstrated that yes, you can do a full CRUD API. You can do create, you can insert, you can delete, you can do all of that. But he's doing it with the Yang properties that I gave him and all the things we want, cell ID, PCI, neighbor list, and all that. But the actual table might look slightly different.
Yeah, but even though we don't do the modify, use the new start type things, at least make sure works first, right?
We could do that.
Just do the one thing that works, like initial flow works, using JSON API, automatic feeding some use case, and then works, and then we can do modify API.
Yeah, I'm already late for another call. So one thing I would suggest, Sandeep, there might be parts of it that you were not aware that some Ted has made some progress. You need some time to just maybe quickly have a call where we zoom in exactly on this so that you can assess what the issue is.
Yeah, Ted, if you can share with me the MySQL model that came out of this, that would be great. Then I'll compare that with what we have, and then I'll come back.
So, Ty,
they're going to. I sent you a package earlier.
Okay.
I can send it again.
Okay. Sorry.
So I was just going
to
say.
Yeah, I'm just trying to say, Ty, they're going to leave today, tomorrow, right? You're going to stay tomorrow, or you will be still around this week?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out next week.
Okay.
So Ted, if you could upload your slides to the link that I just sent, just that's
So
in today's meeting, if the recording of this will also be loaded to the that wiki that's in the chat right now.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thanks, Joanne. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, we'll try to see if we can catch up to Ted before he take off. I will set a meeting with, Sandeep too. Yeah, maybe tomorrow. Ted, you'll be available tomorrow or Friday?
Yeah, either tomorrow or Friday will be good. I don't know if you're in Bedminster, but I'll be in Bedminster tomorrow. I'm normally okay. In New York.
Okay, all right, thank you.
So Shankar or Joanne, it might be good, to every once periodically sort of sync up with Ted in one of either our runtime DB ConfigDB meeting or in the SON meeting too, just to see where we are.
Yeah,
sure. That we can. Mm-hmm. So that is for the SON use case. But there's a larger issue as to is the interest within ONAMP would be only for ConfigDB and 5G, or are people generally interested in?
Well, it seems like it's something. It seems like something that's very useful throughout ONAP. But it's also still in development, right? So it sounds like it still needs some approvals within,
That's true. Yeah.
And then after that, some development. Yeah. So I think, we can point people to this presentation and the recording here, which will be useful for people to learn about it. And then I think as we progress further, it sounds like it's something in R7, and maybe we can. We can have another realization call, to when it's further along too, to socialize where it's at.
Yeah, we could do that. Thank you. Thanks, Ted.
Thanks,
Ted. A lot of good work. Yep.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day. Thanks.
Bye.